broadcasting 24 hours a day from Leeds University Union.
The sound
of students in Leeds.
This is Leeds Student Radio.
And on Wednesday, hello, good afternoon, this is LSR and you're listening to Political Animal, the show dedicated to political questions that matter to you. I'm your presenter, Charlotte Wilson, and this Wednesday afternoon we've got a number of topics that interest to you. Lord Rose has launched a pro-EU campaign for the 2017 referendum. We will be asking, to what extent do you think the EU debate will bring out voters? Or will it be another flop like the Police and Crime Commissioner vote? The party conferences are nearly over and the questions are flying about the new party leaders and the Conservative Party. Who will their new leader be? We will be analysing this alongside our panellists, will the Cameron and Pig thing become a big issue for him? Answering these questions, we've got Isaac Hyman and Yasmin DaCosta alongside our three specialists, Jack Patrick, Tamsin Scott and Lance Casely Hayford. Obviously, we want to hear your opinion too, so if you can find us on Facebook, searching Leeds Student Radio, or alternatively, tweet us at This Is LSR with your hashtag political animal. First up, we've got the news with Jack.
Jeremy Corbyn has challenged David Cameron. Jeremy Corbyn has challenged David Cameron over tax cuts, credit cuts and affordable housing in his second Prime Minister's questioned hand appearance. His government said it was limiting the life chances of hundreds of thousands of children. The Prime Minister said that the national living wage was making people better off. The Labour leader repeated his Prime Minister Question Time's topic of asking questions submitted by the public. He read over 2,000 emails concerning tax credit cuts. Unlike his first outing, the Labour leader then asked a follow-up to the questions that were submitted by email. The BBC political editor Laura Kusenberg said that there was a more effective strategy on his debut, but added, did it really put the Prime Minister under much pressure? Not yet. A nurse who contracted Ebola while working in West Africa is now critically ill, with complications arising from infection. Pauline Kafaki was readmitted to a specialist isolation unit in the Royal Free Hospital in London last week. The hospital said in a statement that her condition was now critical. A statement released by the hospital on Tuesday said, "We are sad to announce that Pauline Kafaki's condition has deteriorated and she is now critically ill." And the campaign for the Britain to stay in the European Union has officially been launched at an event in London, with a TED arguing that the remaining in the EU would be the patriotic course of action. Lord Rose, who used to head the clothing and food retailer Marks & Spencer's, said that to retreat, withdraw and become inward-looking would be to misunderstand what kind of country the UK was. The EU referendum is due to be held before the end of 2017. A rival Eurosceptic campaign launched on Friday with the message, "Vote Leave, take control."
This is the news.
That was Jack with the news. Now, speaking of that issue of the EU debate, we've got a few people who've been talking about that recently. Obviously, you've got the normal ones, Nigel Farage, David Cameron's been coming out with trying to push the vote a little bit more. The question is, how much is the EU referendum going to make a difference? Here we have Isaac and Jack to discuss the issue. First question, to what extent do you think the EU debate will bring out the voters? Will it be another SNP referendum, or is it going to be like the Police and Crime Commissioner's vote?
Well, it's quite interesting because the campaigns have both been launched in the past week. The first campaign, which is to stay in Europe, is called Britain Stronger in Europe. It's received massive support from people like Karen Brady, Richard Branson, and Caroline McCall, who is the CEO of EasyJet. So they're trying to get big names, big brands behind there. And I think that's the tactic of the stay in campaign. On the other side, there's actually two out campaigns. Both of them seem to be competing with the other, and no one seems to know which is the official campaign. Nigel Farage has backed leave.eu, but there's also Vote Leave. There seems to be a lot of tension of which is the one to go with. One of them is backed by a huge UKIP donor. The other has cross-party support from Labour right to UKIP, so they're trying to get across the political spectrum. So the interesting thing is here that they're trying to go for the far left and far right of voters, so I reckon they're going to try and get a large margin of the population, whether it's, you know, you got Greens who are very Eurosceptic in terms of the democratic inefficiencies within the EU, And then you've got on the right, you've got the people who don't want economic migrants within the EU. So I think it could be a big turnout.
Isaac, what do you think?
I just interesting that you spoke about how they're trying to appeal to the far left and the far right of the electorate. And that would then lead to the question of, do you not think that that will then open up a huge gap of people in the middle who are kind of a little bit ambivalent about how they feel about the EU? And so if no one's trying to appeal to their votes, how are they not just going to become marginalised?
Yeah, I think it is a problem. I do think that a lot of the worry about the EU referendum will be misinformation. We have a lot of these campaigns, and we also have a lot of sub-campaigns that come from it. So with the In campaign, June Sarpong, I don't know whether you know her, she's on Loose Women. She's been hired to try and attract the younger votes to stay in the EU. But there's been a lot of discussion about it within the newspapers that no one young seems to know who she is. She seems to be the person who sits watching, is on Loose Women. So it's more mums that maybe know who she is.
So you think that's them trying to appeal to kind of middle England?
Yeah, that's what I think. I think they've sort of, they've got like these big names in like Karen Brady, Richard Branson, obviously, big business. Like Karen Brady's on like The Apprentice. You get the people who are watching these types of shows, and like they're seeing that these people are presenting these ideas. Hopefully you'd think that there's going to be a discussion that's going to be able to like incorporate the whole of the political spectrum across the whole of the UK. But yeah, it's whether they're actually doing it at the moment. It doesn't look like it.
Do you think bringing those celebrities in is going to work? I mean, they're trying to get some people to back each campaign. Like you said, Karen Brady, they've got Richard Branson in there. Do you think it's going to work? Do you think it's going to get people out?
I think that they've probably seen how... because, I mean, the EU is something that up until quite recently, it hasn't really been something that's been on the kind of, you know, on the tip of voters' tongues. It's not really the kind of thing that people have been talking about until now, until the last kind of couple of years. And I think one of the main reasons for that is that you've seen Farage come in and add his kind of, you know, charisma into the mix. And that's clearly, and you know, you can see in the statistics of how effective that's been in getting people involved in the debate, purely by him being so engaging about it. So I think that's probably what the In campaign or the Stay campaign are trying to do by bringing in people like Branson or Karen Brady or whatever. They're trying to kind of use that sort of celebrity factor in order to engage voters. Because I think a lot... One of the fears I think that the Stay campaign is having is that the people who want to leave really want to leave, and the people who want to stay don't really want to stay. They just don't want to leave. They're not really, don't really have any really strong views. So I think they're trying to kind of stir it up a little bit. That's the impression I get anyway.
And it brings a lot of questions up as well about how the vote will actually be cast in terms of, obviously, the Scotland, Wales, England. Scotland is very much pro-EU. The SNP have advocated a Stay position. They've said that they'll fight right up until their last breath to stay within the EU. But within England, you know, we've got like a lot of parts of England which are very anti-EU, lots of parts which are, like you said, like they don't particularly want to stay, but they're not really thinking about it. It's never been discussed before. It's something that's really new to discuss. So yeah, it's interesting to see what's going to happen.
They were talking for a while about giving the vote to 16-year-olds like they did with the SNP vote. What do you think of that? Do you think that would work?
I think it's difficult because one of the reasons that was so effective, I think, with the Scotland referendum is because it was such a kind of like emotive sort of like cause that people could get behind, and the young people especially. So like in this instance, the reason, I mean, I'm commissioner vote as well, I think.
Not sure, were they?
I'm not sure.
I'm out of my depth here, but as in the reason were. That was kind of, you know, that, like I said, it was able to kind of stir up a sort of like, you know, like an emotive sort of, I don't know, kind of dynamic into the mix. And so that's the kind of thing that engages with young people. And so if they can appeal like that in the same way with this EU campaign, which they could have it, because it is basically the kind of concept is very similar to that of the Scotland referendum. It's, you know, do we want to stay as part of this, you know, wider, effectively a kind of intergovernmental organisation? And so I think it could work and it's just interesting, like you say, to see how the misinformation will play into that, because it sounds quite patronising, but and you know, a lot of people will probably disagree, but I think 16 and 17 year olds are more easily swayed by kind of, you know, maybe slightly oversimplified arguments.
But could that not use work in the benefit? I mean, if they're easily swayed, that's going to be... Everyone's easily swayed, in my opinion. You've got all those people out there who can watch TV and all the ad campaigns, but we can get education in at 16. Do you think education plays a part in it, or do you think it just needs to be part of the parties playing?
I think it's difficult because I think the main problem that David Cameron's going to face, because he wants to stay in the European Union. He's made that quite clear. He does want to try and renegotiate, but whether that's going to work remains to be seen. I think there's a problem for him, because if he loses this referendum, I think his career will be over. And the second problem is that the longer he draws it out, the more that voters are going to be fed up with listening to the debate about the EU. We've got 2.5 years, potentially, that we're going to be having this debate. 6 months in, people will get bored of it. It was the same with the Scottish referendum. A lot of English voters were just like, vote. But obviously, in Scotland, it was quite emotive. I don't think that British people feel like they're European citizens. I don't think it's the same, because we're not part of the continent. So I don't know whether it's going to stir up that sort of, that's the atmosphere that it did with the Scottish referendum.
Yeah, you're right. I think the geography does always, you know, and has historically played a massive part in Britain's relationship with the EU, because we're, like you say, we're not a part of the continent. We are quite different in lots of ways to a lot of the member states of the EU. And so, yeah, like you say, that I can see that maybe kind of dulling the enthusiasm of the electorate when it comes to getting involved and engaging with this debate.
Yeah, we all do go on holiday to Europe, don't we? Forgetting that we're actually from there.
Yeah, it does seem a bit like foreign, I think.
It does. I mean, you have got that Allen mentality. The problem is, the emotive side of it is always going to be easier on the yes side to leave, because surely that means that the opposition always have a better hand. Do you think that that's going to work the same way in this one? Because we're already in the EU, it's going to be harder for them to justify it, or do you think it's going to be quite a balanced competition?
It's a hard one to say, because when it came to, I think, the UK in general, Scotland's got a lot of history. The EU is relatively new. It started just after the Second World War. And like I said, there's not much, not a lot of people know what the EU is. I myself didn't, until I started researching a lot about it. Like, I think a lot of people get confused, because there's so many. There's the European Court of Human Rights, European Court of Justice. There's so much to do with Europe, and no one can, unless you sit down and actually have a little read and go into it, you won't really get to feel that emotion. You won't understand what the issues are we're talking about. At the moment, the media just seems to be playing out to be economic migrants, and that there's you can come to the UK, or you can go to the Netherlands and you can get benefits, which is completely, and it's just a misinformation. There needs to be a real debate, there needs to be real education, like you said,
with
young people, and so that people can make an informed decision about whether they want to remain or leave the EU.
The question is, though, I mean, with this migrant crisis, do you think it is a threat? Do you think that's something that leaving the EU could be good for us? Do you think it's something that actually, this has just shown how bad the EU can be for us?
In my opinion, I think that leaving the EU would be a horrible, horrible, horrible mistake. I think we get so much more than we do than we lose out, and you have to buy into it. I think the only reason that we're having this debate, so because a lot of countries are having it in the last few years. But the only reason I think it's been so prominent and so kind of vocal in the UK is because we just have never really bought into it. There's always been the kind of thing that's been sort of like seemed very bureaucratic, very removed from, you know, like everyday life of the ordinary voter. And so it's not the kind of thing that we've bought into. So now when it's been called into question, people are like, yeah, you know what? Why are we part of the EU? What does it actually give to us? And it really, really hasn't been a great deal of information provided. It's just like you say, a lot of kind of oversimplified arguments and sort of talking about migrant crises, which, you know, freedom of movement is one, you know, unarguably an integral part of the EU, but it's only one facet of it. There's a lot of other dimensions of the EU which have just been completely unreported.
Do you think that's the case, Jack? Do you think we're just focusing too much on migrants?
Yeah, 100%. There are a lot of newspapers, there's a lot of media which seem to present it in this way. And also there's been a lot of talk about recently about Germany and Germany's position and what they've been doing with migrants. Today it said that Angela Merkel's facing a lot of problems with her peers with how many refugees that Germany is accepting. But that's a separate issue, I'd say. Like, that's a humanitarian issue, which regardless of whether we were in the EU, we would want to get involved. Yeah. The problems with the EU is misinformation, and it is an education that the UK needs in terms of like the amount of business that it helps business growth within the UK and the EU. Things like, if you put it down simply to students going on an exchange year, Erasmus, if as a student you get €3,000 just given to you off the UK government through the EU, and it just promotes mobility, it promotes going round and seeing a different way of life, working abroad as well. I think we need to get into our heads, like working together in terms of things with climate change and things like that. That's the only way that we're going to be able to head forward.
I think we've seen from discussions here that we've got two pro-EU guys sitting in the room. So basically, the summary is, we think, yeah, they're going to be able to get a good voter turnout, but the culture is what our problem with the EU, not necessarily what's actually happening with it, and we're just getting told the wrong things. Is that what we're getting from there?
Yeah, completely.
Fantastic. Well, next up, we're going to be discussing the party conferences. I mean, focusing a little bit on the Tory conference, but obviously we'll talk about the rest as well. Please do get in touch if you have any opinions on anything we've said. If you disagree with anything we've said, it's at This Is LSR on Twitter or Lead Student Radio. Up next, we've got the Fratellis with Chelsea Dagger.
Chelsea, I believe that when you dance and slowly suck on your sleeve.
This is Political Animal on LSR. That was the Fratellis. Fantastic song. That's my favourite of all of the Fratellis songs. Now, back to business. This week is the last week of the conferences. It was SNP this week, but we've had both Labour and Liberal Democrats showing off their new party leaders, while the Conservatives, as government, have been talking about what they've got in store for us in the future. We've got Tamsin here to discuss a little bit more about the conferences.
Okay. So basically, over the last few weeks, we've had three completely different party conferences in Bournemouth, Manchester and Brighton. First to present their new look with the Liberal Democrats, with a new leader, Tim Farron. And all throughout the conference, there was quite an upbeat atmosphere, which is something that you wouldn't really expect from a party who only had eight MPs left. There was a detectable element of nostalgia, especially for Nick Clegg, who received a standing ovation for perhaps his final speech at a conference. But his presence didn't feel forced, really, or like a sorry goodbye. It felt like something that needed to kickstart the new Lib Dems. This optimism was a key feature of the party conference, and it was high in the air. It'll be interesting to see whether Farron will be able to take the Lib Dems in a new direction, now that they don't have the Tories to appease, and where they will fit in with Labour's concrete left stance and Cameron's centre. Now, talking of Labour, their conference in Brighton was rather calm, and considering the dynamic force that is now taking them to the left, Jeremy Corbyn's speech was what was expected. He kept his anti-austerity themes and his self-deprecating rhetoric. In fact, he carried on like this for over an hour. An all-around respectable conference, there were no stand-up mishaps for Corbyn's Labour, and it was a mix of old and new, with some MPs looking a bit out of place in this new left-centred community. Some MPs, however, made it clear that they will oppose some of Corbyn's more radical policies, such as the will to scrap Trident, which was contradicted by Shadow Defence Minister Secretary Marie Eagle. Overall, the Brighton 15 was quite a chilled out event, considering the dramatic changes to the Labour Party. It paved the way well for Liverpool 2016, in which Corbyn's plans will become more clear to the public. Now finally, the Conservative conference that took place in Manchester was quite a controversial one. There's been quite a few little controversial bits anyway with the Tory party recently. Perhaps over the ways of dealing with the new Labour leader, but also some more recent scandals, less recent scandals, however, that have come to light. But this didn't seem to have any effect on the conference itself, however, which was quite surprising, really. You'd have thought that, yeah, some things would have impacted it. But overall, it was an air of triumph, with serious undertones. The government ministers focused on the security of the country with a few jibes at Corbyn scattered throughout speeches. There was a large focus on moving to the centre ground of politics, and to make this happen, they seemingly have taken on board many of the new Labour's proposals, such as the living wage and the devolution of business rates to local councils. Under the surface of the conference, there's a lot of talk of who will be the next Tory leader, as Cameron has let slip that the 2015 was the last election he will undertake as leader. This was reinforced by Osborne and May's longer speeches, which was perhaps putting themselves forward for further consideration in the public eye. And that's basically all I have to say on the conferences.
So really, it seems like we've got actually quite a positive thing for the Tories rather than Labour, which is not what we expected.
Yeah, definitely. The Tories have definitely taken on board. They've seen Jeremy Corbyn as a blessing in disguise, I think. I heard the other day that a lot of Tory leaders, Tory members, signed up to Labour to vote for Jeremy Corbyn. So
we're joined here with Yasmin as well, one of their expertise in this field. What do you think? Who do you think made a splash? Do you think Jeremy Corbyn did really live up to his standards, his expectations?
Well, I mean, he could have gone either one of two ways. You know, there was the people who voted for him, who brought him into power, and we all know what they wanted. They wanted anti-austerity, they wanted nuclear disarmament, you know, they wanted very radical left policies, and they want him to take that stance. But of course, then he's got a lot of MPs within his own party who are a lot more less radical than him and really want to take the centre ground. So it's either one of those two. In the actual speech, I think he was good at establishing some middle ground, but then near the end of the conference, when there was that conflict, when he made it quite clear that he still wasn't on the side of keeping Trident, and then some of his own peers went against him, like the Shadow Defence Secretary, that kind of, I think, ruined it a bit. So for most of the conference, the tension was it didn't really ball up, but then when the nuclear question came up, that was when things got a bit shaky.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, maybe it was a unifying effect. Do you think his speech made a splash? Do you think it was something impressive? Obviously, he had that little blip where he read out his side notes. Do you think it's really going to make a difference, or do you think it actually lives up to his kind of presence as not being a front man?
Well, I think it's still early days, yeah. I mean, he's only been the job, what, for like, I mean, just over a month. So we still need to see him more in action, a couple more Prime Minister's questions. Maybe he'll be maybe on other political shows like the Andrew Marr show or something like that, have other interviews. But I think overall it wasn't all right speech, but the Conservatives really brought it with their speech and David Cameron's speech and taking the centre ground. I think the problem is as well with the Labour conference that we keep thinking about Jeremy Corbyn. He was the only highlight of the conference, whereas with the Conservatives you didn't just have David Cameron's speech. You had David Cameron, George Osborne, Theresa May, Boris Johnson. There were so many highlights, so many things to talk about and get excited about. Whereas Labour, other than Jeremy Corbyn's speech, no one seems to be talking about anything, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree. I mean, I'd actually go further than that. I thought I was very kind of underwhelmed by Corbyn's speech. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it was just very distinctly kind of mediocre. He didn't really, you know, capture that essence of that energy that he was what brought him into the position in the first place. He kind of was very sort of laid back and relaxed, and he used an auto cue, and he kind of, you know, wore a tie and everything, and he kind of sort of played up to the role of a party leader. Do you know what I mean? He wasn't really kind of you know, taking on and continuing that sort of almost an anti-establishment feeling. What brought him there.
I disagree personally. I think that he's playing up to a different role, but I think that's the role of a man who has stumbled across his power and doesn't know what to do with it. I think he was acting up to say that he was stumbling his words, he wasn't presenting himself very well, he still looked a bit scruffy, like he didn't know how he'd got there. And I think that's something he's very well calculated. I think he knows what he's doing.
So do you think it's a tactic then? Do you think he knows exactly what he's doing, or do you think it is just a stumbling at the job?
I think he's been in politics for so long. He's, you know, when David Cameron was falling about in uni, Jeremy Corbyn was arguing against apartheid. So I think that he's been in this business long enough to know how to get things done.
And in fairness, he did, you're right, he seemed relaxed, which was maybe he was trying to bring in another dimension, because a lot of the, you know, during that campaign, that leadership campaign, he was always very sort of passionate and very kind of direct and to the point. And so maybe he was trying to sort of fill it out a little bit and make himself, you know, show that other side of his personality, that he doesn't have to be always kind of really, you know, can be quite aggressive, not necessarily in a bad way, but it's always kind of rallying and explaining what he disagrees with. And maybe you're right, he was potentially trying to show a warmer and more relaxed kind of aspect of his personality.
It'll definitely be interesting to see what happens in 2016, like Tamsin said, once he's got his feet on the ground, when he knows what he's doing. Moving slightly on, trying to change it to a probably less well-known, well-talked-about conference, the Liberal Democrat conference, something that a year ago we would have talked about probably more than we would have been the Labour. Anybody listen to Tim Farron's speech? Anybody have any comments? I mean, he's a new leader out there. He's brought himself. It was between him and Norman Lamb for the election. Do you think he was a good choice?
I think the conference was a lot more dignified. The leadership was a lot more dignified than the Labour one. There was a lot of dirty tactics in the Labour leadership race. Whereas it was a very civilised race for Lib Dems, and that carried on into the speech. He was very hopeful. He thanked Nick Clegg and he thanked all the supporters, but he didn't seem to be dismissing everything he's done. And I think he's just, yeah, I really liked it. I thought if I was to vote someone else, it would be Lib Dems with this new one.
I mean, I didn't really think it was that much of a genuine leadership race with regard to the Liberal Democrats. I mean, it kind of was always going to be Tim Farron, I think. And he's, you know, I was very impressed with his speech, but I didn't really see that kind of split that you had in the Labour Party, that sort of division.
But the conditions of the Liberal Democrats are, to be fair, completely different to Labour.
Yeah.
I mean, for one thing, Liberal Democrats clearly have a place to go. They're very much agreed on where they went wrong. They feel they became too professionalised, too political, and they want to go back to their more grassroots, how they were known before, sort of the Charles Kennedy days, when they were known for taking stances that weren't as popular amongst the other parties, like, you know, standing up and saying, no, we shouldn't go into Iraq, for example. So I think they've got a much clearer idea of what they need to do and where they've gone wrong. Whereas with Labour, people have all sorts of different ideas and they haven't really come together into one unified, you know, this is the future, this is where we need to go. And also the transition was easier as well. I mean, there seemed to be a lot of tension, a lot of, you know, sort of pointing and blaming in the aftermath of the general election. I mean, between Ed Miliband and the party, I mean, that whole transition was very messy. I mean, his speech when he resigned, that didn't help. That speech was awful. I was like, what was that speech? That didn't really, like, finalise or really... It didn't leave things on a good note at all. I thought Nick Clegg's speech was absolutely excellent.
Yeah, his resignation speech was very impressive.
Yeah, it was really, really good. And I think that made the whole transition a lot easier.
I think you'd definitely say that Nick Clegg's speech moved quite a few people to tears who you didn't expect to. I think I had a little tear when I saw him on stage. We'll be talking a little bit more about the Tory conference just after this song. We've got the song of the week for LSR, which is Corinne Black Honey.
Come back to me, 'cause it's 6 in the morning and we're only playing make-believe. Corey, come back to me, 'cause we live in a movie that nobody else will ever see.
This is Political Animal on LSR. We're here discussing, at the moment, party conferences. Now, we've done Lib Dems and we've done the Labour Party and we've had our opinions on them. Now, moving on to the Conservative Party. We're joined here by Lance as well, who's one of our resident experts in this field. First of all, the party, yes, it was dominated by a speech by David Cameron. The leader's always going to be there. But really, was it the Osborne speech that got it? Who do you think that was where the influence and where the power was lay in that conference?
Personally, I think George Osborne in general has a lot of influence. when it comes to the Conservative Party anyway and Conservative Party policy. I mean, just look over the past, you know, 5 years of, you know, his Chancellor of the Exchequer. And I think he, his speech in particular was, both his speech and Theresa May's speech were, in my opinion, moves to, you know, talk about the party leadership, you know, moves
a
for
leader
the,
speech,
yeah,
really.
A leader speech, sort of trialing themselves out, so to speak.
They kind of massively went over the remit of what was necessary.
Exactly,
to
they tread on David Cameron's toes quite a lot, and I think Cameron's speech in particular was very strange.
The thing is, what you've got to remember with David Cameron is he is going to step down. He's accepted that. Do you think this conference was him allowing that to happen, or do you think he just got overshadowed?
I don't think he was overshadowed. I think his toes were tread on, like I said, but I don't think he was overshadowed. I think his speech was very, very sort of him trying to renew the whole idea of the compassionate conservatives, progressive conservatives, taking sort of walking right over Labour fields when it comes to a lot of the policies, especially when I think the National Living Wage policy.
So-called National Living Wage.
I know, and a few others. It's, yeah, I think Cameron is using Corbyn and the shift to the left to his advantage.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. I mean, like, a lot of the rhetoric over the last few months has been about Cameron and Osborne saying the Conservatives are the party for the working people, which,
yeah,
you know, 10, 15 years ago would have been unthinkable for that to be even kind of vaguely, you know, on the agenda of things of the ways that in which they would describe themselves. And I think because the Labour Party have been so kind of disorganised and in such disarray, that the Conservatives have snuck in and been able to put forward an alternative sort of vision of what it is, of what it means for a government to look after the working man.
Of course, yeah.
So if that's the case, if we think that they're doing a very tactical move,
completely, yeah.
Did it work? Do you think it actually captivated the audience? Do you think that they've rallied the troops there, that way maybe Corbyn didn't?
I don't know about rallied the troops. I think it is kind of slowly and kind of continually effective. That's what has been the kind of, you know, that's the way that Cameron's Conservative Party has seemed to do things. They kind of just push this kind of rhetoric, and eventually it gets absorbed by the electorate. And you've seen that with so much stuff, you know, for example, with immigration, with benefits, with so much stuff. They just kind of keep pushing it, and eventually it slowly shifts the sort of public consciousness.
I mean, I think that's true to an extent, that they are very good at pushing agendas through media and through getting us to feel certain things about immigration benefits. I think that's partly true, but also I think this is just a natural cycle of what happens when you have an economic downturn. Is that...
Do you think?
Yeah, I do believe that. I think it happens almost every time. You know, you start playing the blame game, and things that no one was really bothered about or didn't really care about suddenly become an issue, like, oh, all these immigrants and we need to cut benefits and things like that. In terms of this tactical move, I do believe it is a tactical move for them to take the centre ground from Labour. But I don't think we should undermine the fact that this compassionate conservatism is something that David Cameron is generally passionate about, but that it coming back into the forefront of conservative policy is just happening sooner than expected. But I think he always wanted it to come back because it's sort of been his brand. It's always sort of been the thing he's wanted. Yeah, it's always been his thing, the thing he's wanted to do for a very long time, since he became leader. So it is tactical, but I think there's passion behind that. I think it's something that he's generally wanted. I think he's happy that he's Labour's providing the opportunity to bring it back sooner than expected, I think.
Speaking very specifically of David Cameron, he seems to be in the press for a few different reasons recently. We've had that very well-known pig scandal, but in general, I think the Conservative Party have had to deal with quite a few scandals recently. Obviously, the pig scandal came all related to the Lords, whether the Lord were going to be able to get into the cabinet, the finances of the party, but talking specifically for young Conservatives, the young Conservative that got egged. Now, that was something a lot of people posted, and I know a lot of people laughed about, but in general, do you think that kind of political activity is acceptable? Is it something that we should support? Is it political activity, or is it just people being inappropriate?
It's inappropriate. It's straight up inappropriate. I mean, if you disagree with someone on a particular policy or in general, you don't threaten them or throw eggs at them or spit at them, which is what was happening at the Conservative Party conference. I'm not a fan of the Conservatives myself at all, but it's not justifiable. Have a debate, yeah, fine, but let's not start threatening people or start throwing eggs at people and spitting on journalists who are just turning up to do their job. It's outrageous.
I completely agree. I was like, I thought it was absolutely disgusting. I was really, really shocked that people were kind of, you know, continuing with that, you know, old-fashioned way of looking at the Conservatives, of being like, oh, you know, bloody Tories or whatever. Like, I thought it was horrible seeing people keep sharing that video on Facebook and on Twitter and stuff. And I think it highlights a real, real problem. Like, one of, arguably, the core problem, in my opinion, that is that we have with the left in this country and in other countries, is that there's just such a massive superiority complex. And I think, I mean, I'm probably guilty of it as well, but, like, one of the main reasons that I think the Tories kind of snuck into that win at the election was because of this so-called phenomenon of quiet Conservatives, of people being ashamed to admit that they empathise or, you know, sympathise with the Conservatives' message.
Yeah.
Because of the left, the people on the left being, like, so vocal and so kind of really, really aggressive, and aggressive in a bad way rather than aggressive in a good way, as I mentioned last time. Like, really aggressive and being like, oh, these Tories are disgusting, they're destroying this country. And that's an opinion that's fine to have, but pushing it so kind of violently and throwing eggs at people and spitting at people is just completely the wrong way to go about it, and it just doesn't aid the cause at all.
No, it doesn't.
Agree. Yasmin, there was, obviously, it was a big issue because it was such a scandal, and it was at the conferences. It's happened before to politicians. Do you think it made a difference that it was to a young party member?
I mean, I'm not sure. I think, in my personal opinion, I do empathise a bit more because it's a young person and some of my age. I wouldn't think it's appropriate in any instance, but I think particularly in the context of all this worry, which I think is a bit over the top, because it's not true in a lot of cases that young people disengage politics, they're not interested in politics, and then you see someone who clearly is interested in politics because they're a young Conservative, and then they get egged at the party conference, and it's just like, well, that's not going to get you interested in politics, is it? So I think in that context it's quite upsetting.
So there's a fear to get into politics even?
I think there is. I mean, not just in politics, but being in the public eye these days with social media and what's going on, and that example and the fact that it went viral. I mean, nowadays we live in a general world and culture where people love it when something bad happens to you. People absolutely love it. They comment on it, they laugh about it, they joke about it. It makes people feel better, and it's general. You can see it not only in politics, but in all areas of public life. I mean, like, with politics today, if you go into politics, it's going to get dirty and it's going to get personal. So, yeah, you might need to have some fear if you want to go into politics, because it's not what it used to be anymore. It's not just newspapers.
I don't think that you should kind of expect that kind of political violence, though. I don't think...
Oh, no, not at all. But it's something that comes with it. You shouldn't have to put up with it, but unfortunately, because the world... Yeah, it's the reality.
A lot of the time people do say politics is passion, and I guess that could be part of parcel with it. We've got to move on now. We hear this week about the devastating news of Lord Dennis Healey and Geoffrey Howe. We've got a little bit more information about this from Lance, who's going to tell us a bit of information about their lives and what they've done for this country.
Yeah, obviously Dennis Healey and Lord Geoffrey Howe both passed away recently. And for me, I think Dennis Healey is quite a big figure. I think he was a Labour Chancellor at the time. The last Labour Chancellor to sort of go to the IMF for a bailout when, you know, in the 70s, unemployment was high, inflation was nearly 25%, so on and so forth. and it was possibly something, in my opinion, something he had to go ahead and do. I think he's somebody who was very sort of what's the word? Artsy. he was very cultural.
Yes.
And his favorite musicians were Bach, Mozart, and Beethoven. And I think there are pieces online. I don't know if you've seen them, but watercolor paintings. He used to do that as well. There's one of his wife back in the 50s, and it's actually a really beautiful piece. I think one thing that sticks out for me is him in general, his attitude to politics. He once sort of said that politics must only be a small part of your life, and people who have no interest in places, things like the arts, make very bad politicians. I think for me that's sort of something that sticks out, because I'm a musician and I have an interest in politics anyway. And, you know, yeah.
He was discussed as on BBC and from a number of different people as being the best Prime Minister Labour never had. Now, if that is the case, I mean, this is just going to have to be a quick one. Do you think there is a lot of wasted talent because of the fact that we've got that kind of political ladder system? Do you think people like Dennis Healey are lost within the political system?
I don't think he was ever lost. I think he himself said on, I think it was the same Desert Island Discs, and he said he pretty much would have liked to have seen it happen, because a lot of people sort of, he didn't really believe he could have been, but he would have liked to have seen it happen simply because other people said that he was good enough for it. But I don't think he was lost. I think he was a towering figure. He was a giant, really.
Yeah, both fantastic men. Our thoughts go to their families and obviously both all the parties involved and Parliament, because obviously they lost two fantastic men in the last week. After this, we'll be looking at the societies that have been involved and what events have got going on. We'll also be talking to what shows up next, which is The Beat. First of all, we've got Biffy Clyro with Many of Horror.
You say I love you, boy, but I know you lie. I trust you all the same. I don't know why. To hide.
Hello, we're back. This is Political Animal, and we've been talking about the party conferences. We're here with Mo from The Beat, who's up next. What have we got up next, Mo?
Hi, everyone. How are we all doing?
We're good. It's a bit intense. We've had a few too many debates in here. I think we're all getting a bit sweaty.
Hey, no, to be fair, Political Animal always goes in deep. I mean, I don't know anything about politics, so please forgive me for being on your holy ground here.
Well, let's go with the very basics, Mo. Let's try and find some how much you know about politics.
Oh, gosh.
In comparison, I mean, we don't expect you to have watched the conferences. We're all nerds here. Who, but on a person basis, and seeing what he looks like, who's got the worst hair? Corbyn or Osborne?
I don't really like Osborne, so it's got to be Osborne.
I think
it's just like greasy, isn't it? Like Corbyn. Corbyn just looks like a nice old man.
Yeah, he looks like an uncle, the crazy uncle.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know how old your uncle is, but...
Oh, I apologise to all of the uncles out there that I have that may be listening.
Yeah, I'm an uncle and I'm not that old.
I've just Googled George Osborne to get another little look, but it says some results may have been removed under data protection law in Europe, so I think they know that we're doing this.
They know. Mm-hmm. They know that. That's what it is. What have you got up on your show then, Mo?
Right, so today is the return of Wednesday Beat, and we're all about arts, music and culture here in Leeds. So we're going to be talking a little bit about, obviously, Radio 1 Extra Live, which is coming in. We're also going to be talking about Beacons Metro and various other things like Hedgerow House. All I'm going to say is just keep it locked. We're going to be going in hard.
What music are we starting with? What have we got the go-to song?
We have got the go-to song, but again, I'm going to keep that under wraps. I'm going to keep the listeners waiting.
Mysterious. I like it. Now, before we wrap up, I want to give you a quick notice from Lance about the socials and society events that are on, more related to politics than anything else, because we're biased.
Well, Polis have a safety think tank meeting. It's in the Hidden Cafe at 5:30. The topic is how to make Leeds safer. Apparently there's free food there and so on and so forth, and there's going to be a few community speakers, so if you want to put some ideas forward, you can go ahead and do that. Leeds MUN Society are tomorrow, Thursday, are discussing the refugee crisis in Europe. The refugee crisis in the Middle East. That'll be in Baines Ring, 4:12 at 6 p.m., meet them outside the union at 5:45 p.m. It's £1 on the website for their give it a go. It's basically their give it a go. Leeds Uni Labour Society have a weekly thing on Mondays at 6 in the Old Bar. It's Pint and Policy Night every Monday. On the 20th, they have their an event at MOOC and Hi-Fi, and they are absolutely brilliant places, so go ahead, go join them.
Dangerous places?
What? I'm kidding. But Leeds Liberal Youth, they have their weekly meetings on Wednesday in the Laidlaw Costa at 12. They have an event on the 22nd as well in the Terraced. At 7:30. Conservative Future, again, on Thursday, in the Baines Wing, SR214. They have their intro session, and on the 23rd, they have Jason McCartney, MP, coming over for a talk. And in sport, the Polish Society football team outgripped a 2-2 draw against the History Society this afternoon at Bodenton Sports Ground, with Jasper Cannon scoring a magnificent long-range equaliser late to earn the team a hard-fought point.
Wow, fantastic. Plenty going on there, and Isaac is definitely really pulsed. So all those football fans out there, we've got it in for you.
Hey.
This week we've had Yasmin, Jack, we've had Lance, Isaac, and myself, Charlotte, all talking to you about...
And Tamsin.
Oh, I'm sure I said Tamsin. All talking to you about the party conferences, and we've also been talking about EU. Next week, Isaac will be your presenter, and I'm sure we'll have plenty to debate on for that. Until next week, we look forward to hearing anything you've got to say about the conversations we've had. Like I said before, at This Is LSR, or if not, Leeds Student Radio, post any questions, anything that you've got involved, anything you disagree with, anything you support, just go for it. That being us, we thank you very much for being part of the show. This has been Political Animal.
This is Leeds Student Radio.
Sound.
Students.
In Leeds.
Delivering over 100 hours of broadcasting made by 300 students every week.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello and welcome.
And.
It's all about you.
Looking for a house next year?
Then come to Spencer Properties for a friendly, professional and stress-free service.
With a wide range of properties in Hyde Park, Headingley, Woodhouse, Burley and the city centre.
And golden membership with Unipol, we are the perfect way to find your first home.
And we've been voted the safest landlord by Leeds University Union.
Spencer Properties, come find your new home. Take a trip to Italy with La Bezzi Italian Restaurant.
You can bring your own alcohol and make use of our 10% student discount every Sunday to Thursday.
On a wide range of top quality dishes straight from the heart of Italy. Come visit us on Clarendon Road, just a stone's throw away from Leeds University.
La Bezzi, authentic Italian cuisine.
You look tired, mate. You could do with a flat white coffee.
Open from 8 a.m. with three guest blends. This ain't your normal cup of joe.
Come down to Brudenell Grove in Hyde Park and tuck into our range of food and drinks alongside free Wi-Fi.
We're open from morning to the late hours,
giving you plenty of time to kick back with your mates.
East Village, proud sponsors of the LSR Breakfast Show.
Leeds Student Radio brings you The Beat.
Every weekday at 6, we'll be giving you the latest on student news, views and lifestyle in your city.
Brought to you by Amber Cars, you'll be the first to know what's going on.
Call us on 01132 311 366 or download the app
for the quickest taxi service in Leeds.
The Beat is the only place to be.
Broadcasting 24 hours a day from Leeds University Union.
The sound
of students in Leeds.
This is Leeds Student Radio.
I breathe irresponsibly, inhale into my bloodstream. This space I can't seem to fill. Hard up, begging, but I'm still lost in the margin. There's a line, can't turn the pages I have tried. Hopeless, if you only see, I'm here to focus on the line of sight. You care, and in truth, I don't compare. And cause you're so around me, might be subconscious. There's a chance you'll let me know. Cause I've been looking for a good girl. Yeah, I'm looking for a good girl. Tell me if I'm looking at. Can I get a sign before?